This here. Great. Welcome back, guys, to another episode on the Curly and You podcast. Today we have with us Peter. Peter, please introduce yourself.
Hi, everybody. My name is Peter Niemi. I am one of the co-founders and currently the CEO of Recovery Plus USA.
Great. Tell us more about how you got started and all stuff like that.
Sure. So Recovery Plus is, to put it quite simply, we provide home-based cardiac rehabilitation services, and we were founded by their three founders. One is a business school classmate of mine, Dr. Lei Zhen, who is a surgeon from China before he came to the U.S. to get his MBA. And the other one is Tim Bilbrey, who is a cardiac rehab specialist and exercise physiologist in Texas. Myself, my background is in pharmaceutical marketing, so I've been working with pharmaceutical companies, large and small, to commercialize pharmaceutical products, medical devices, things like that for all my life, for 40 years in the business. And so that's the team, really. We have an EP specializing in this type of chronic rehabilitation. We have a surgeon who's passionately committed to bringing treatment to the people who need it the most. And then you've got me, who's a specialist in marketing and commercialization and operations, who makes it all work and makes sure it's profitable.
That's amazing. So how did you decide to go into this industry?
Well, really, Dr. Zhen and I, who were good friends, so we were in business school about 15 years ago, always hit it off, always said we wanted to work together in something. He went back to China after business school. And then we kept in touch, of course, for 5 or 6 years. We started talking about this thing he was working on. And then about 2 years ago, we all got together. The timing was really interesting because we actually went to a trade show right as I think it was February of 2020, so right before COVID really became a global force. And we've been working on growing the company pretty much ever since then. We really started at the end of last year to really commercialize it in the US. We soft launched in January, and the website you're looking at now, this full version of the website just dropped in, I think it was early August. So it's maybe a month that we've been fully live.
That's amazing. So it's been a month since you have done the official website launch?
Yes, the full website. We had a placeholder that launched in early January, but then, we spent about 6 months building this full version.
That's amazing. And how are you looking to differentiate yourselves within the industry?
Sure. So there are a number of different people who work in this space. Obviously, traditional cardiac rehab is a big one, but the problem that we're here to solve is that traditional cardiac rehab only reaches about 20% of the people who are eligible for it. There just are not enough in-person centers, and people are not able to get to them. Geography is a huge limiting factor. Cost can be a limiting factor. And so our solution is home-based. There are some software solutions that partner with rehab centers to try to deliver remote or home-based rehab. Our big differentiator is we are everything. We are the clinic, the RNs and the EPs all work for us, including the doctors. So we are the treaters. We built the software. We built the patient app. We use our own technology to deliver home-based rehabilitation. But we are not only a tech company. We start from the rehab. I should mention, we are an insurance-based solution. So we are fully reimbursable. There is no cost to our patients.
Okay, interesting. Do you need any approval to get yourself in such industries? Do you need any professional
the approval
certificates
by,
or something?
Sure. You need to be licensed to practice medicine, and it's a state-by-state process. And you also have to be accepted by Medicare for insurance reimbursement. That is a process. It's state-by-state. But we have all those approvals so that we can deliver telemedicine and telerehabilitation, home-based rehab across the United States. So we are starting to look at European expansion as well. Obviously, health systems vary widely. So that is a country-by-country challenge.
Have you taken a look at what Mark Cuban has launched with this company, CostPlusDrugs.com?
Sure, of course. A big fan of what he's done. He's an interesting guy. He always speaks his mind. And so Cost Plus Drugs is very interesting. Definitely for a core group of people who are overpaying for generic drugs, it can be a godsend. It is a seller of generic drugs. So it addresses one part of the cost of drugs in the pharmaceutical industry. It doesn't sell the branded drugs, which actually are where most of the problem is with high prescription costs. It's drugs that are branded and thus not eligible. They're exclusive, obviously, until the patent expires. Everything on Cost Plus Drugs is already generic.
So won't there be any lawsuits associated with Cost Plus Drugs putting their prices so low with other pharmaceutical companies?
No, it's everything's generic, so I don't see that happening. They're competing with the generic drug manufacturers. Yeah, in many cases, you could get these drugs at your local pharmacy if you have health insurance at not a huge cost. But yeah, I don't see the generic manufacturers are not in the business of expensive lawsuits or expensive marketing. That's why they're generic. So it certainly could happen, but I don't think it's going to be an issue. That's just not the nature of the industry.
Why do you think that there's no one else that have done this, that have reduced the prices so much in the past?
What I would be interested to know is really what the economics, because of my answer to that question, my guess would be it's economics. This is a interesting company, serves a very much needed niche. It's cost right in the name, right? It's Cost Plus Drugs. So he's only marking up 15%. It's not a hugely profitable company. So if profit motive is your only motive, and of course, in most businesses, it is, whether it's the pharma business or any other business, then you probably wouldn't do this. Clearly, Mark Cuban and his team had something that wanted to do as social good here more than just profits. It's not a hugely profitable company. Again, they're only marking up 15%. So that's it. They're going to have to do a lot of volume to generate significant cash flow.
So if you took this company tomorrow and became the CEO, what would you do differently, if anything?
Oh, I don't think I'd do anything different. I don't think I'd want to be CEO of it. It's much closer to me. It's much, Cost Plus Drugs is much closer to like a nonprofit, something that's really out there to serve a particular need rather than, it's there to provide value to its customers as much, if not more so, than to provide returns to its shareholders. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And who is your target demographic for RecoveryPlus.health?
Sure. We have a number of target markets, starting with the most obvious one is people who are in need of cardiac rehabilitation. According to CMS Medicare, there are 1.3 million people in the U.S. who are eligible for cardiac rehab. And as I said earlier, only about 20% or less actually are able to go to in-person cardiac rehab, the gold standard. So our first and most obvious target is that 80%. We want to get people who are not able to access cardiac rehab to be able to do it at home. Simple equipment, no equipment, monitored by a healthcare professional, overseen by a physician. You can do cardiac rehab at home that is as effective as in-person cardiac rehab. After that, we have a number of other target markets, this type of chronic rehabilitation, pulmonary rehab, long COVID, any chronic condition that requires ongoing treatment under the supervision of an exercise physiologist. And then the final component there I would mention is preventative care, right? The real goal of cardiac rehab is if someone's had some kind of cardiac event and has gone to the hospital, is to prevent them from being readmitted to having another cardiac event. That happens about 30% of the time within the first month. So the goal of cardiac rehab is to eliminate that. You don't want readmission, right? That's dangerous for the patient. It's not good for the treating doctor. And it's expensive for the payers, for the insurance companies, right? A hospital readmission, an ER visit, and a potential ICU stay is massively expensive. So that's really the goal. One of the things that we do is we get people into our system before they have a heart event. Preventative care. We want to eliminate as many ER visits as possible, as many heart events as possible. So preventative care is a big and growing part of our business, not just rehabbing from a cardiac event, but preventing a cardiac event entirely in people who are high risk, have comorbidities, who have risk factors such as diabetes, weight, blood pressure, hypertension that could lead to a heart event. If we can get them to them early and get them into our program, we can keep them healthy.
So how do you help people avoid or after the cardiac event, make sure that this doesn't happen and keep them healthy?
Sure. So cardiac rehab, it's an exercise program that you get people moving according to their abilities. Mm. There's obviously a very wide range of people, right? If you have a 40-year-old triathlete who had a heart event, his or her recovery plan is going to look a lot different from an 80-year-old who's got heart failure issues, right? So it's got to be a very tailored plan, but getting people moving and exercising is well documented to prevent readmission. The problem is access to care. As I said earlier, the big thing, geography, being able to get into the center is very difficult. And then think about our target group, the audience that we're addressing, right? These are people who are at risk of a heart event. So these are not people who are excited to exercise, right? Or they're excited to go to the gym and lose 10 pounds or something like that. They're scared. They're worried that if they overexert themselves, they'll have an adverse event. And so in cardiac rehab, you're working with a professional. They're taking your blood pressure. They're monitoring your heart rate while you exercise and making sure you're safe, reassuring you that you are safe and making sure you're not overstraining yourself, which of course could be a risk factor, and just making sure you're moving according to your abilities, getting you going. Doing nothing is the worst solution. And unfortunately, that is, there's a lot of inertia, and so doing nothing happens far too often.
Yep, agreed. And how are you, like, and would you say that most of your target demographic is over the age of 55, 60?
Certainly, there is a skew to that age group. We do target, it is definitely people with risk factors who tend to be older. Though we do have a lot of younger patients. We've even got a few pediatric cases that have usually family risk factors, right, that could contribute to potential heart issues down the road. So yes, certainly we skew towards the 55 plus crowd, but not exclusively by any means.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And how are you finding their ability to adapt to new technologies? As for people who are the older age, like for example, 60 plus, then they're less likely to adapt to new technologies compared to people who are the age of 20, 25. So how are you thinking about like helping them be willing to adjust, because they need to have like a touch phone. And for example, in my country, we're a pretty close community. I'm based in Europe, a small country called Cyprus, and people over the age of 60, 65, then they do not have like a touch phone. They have, yeah.
Yep. Now it's interesting question. And actually, speaking of other countries, there is a Recovery Plus China. That's where most of this tech was originally created. And in China, the phone is so integrated into the daily life, everyone's comfortable with it, right? You can't park your car without using your phone to pay. So it's as much as the phones are integrated into our daily life in the US, in China, it's even more so. They're way ahead. So it's definitely an issue. It's definitely getting people to use the technology an issue. We sometimes have to rely on more traditional methods. Over the last couple of years, clearly almost everyone has got comfortable with, we're doing this over a Zoom call right now, right? So telehealth visits, Zoom calls, home-based, everything has become the norm, regardless of age, just out of necessity, right? Doesn't matter how old you were in 2020, your chances of going to see your doctor in person, unless you had COVID, were very slim, right? So that being said, you're absolutely right. It is a big challenge for us. We are working all the time on making our technology easier to use. We're in the process of developing kind of a light free version of the app, which we hope to have done this year, which is really just get started quickly. It's very light, not runs on any phone. You can just dive right in, see what the exercises look like and see how easy it is. We're working on the user experience to make it easier and easier. Setting up, we're talking about setting up in New York where we have a lot of patients, clients, an in-person location where they can actually come in. In some cases, we're doing clinical research where we're actually just supplying iPads already preloaded with the software. So you're absolutely right. It certainly is a challenge. And we just try to figure out what the barriers to usage are and go after them very methodically. Just like we went after, as the company as a whole, we went after what are the barriers to home-based rehab. It's not reimbursable. Figure that out. It's hard to do. Figure that out. And so, you're absolutely right. It's certainly an issue, but I think we're solving it. Unfortunately, the pandemic has accelerated people's acceptance of home-based technology. And between our work and general acceptance, the barriers are lowering. But I will not sit here and tell you it's not an issue. It certainly is.
Are you thinking about like going to trainers or basically trainers who have your target demographic and telling them to create some videos for them to be on your app, and then they will promote your brand to their athletes, and they will be a win-win situation? Plus, are you reaching out to doctors and health professionals to promote recoveryplus.health?
Sure. So we have a number of, we market to a number of different constituencies. Certainly doctors are certainly currently the number one. For a full cardiac rehab program, you do need to, you get referred into it by your doctor. So cardiologists are a big source of most of our business, and other healthcare and other doctors who they refer them into the program. Other ways that we reach people are just outreach to patients, getting patients aware of the fact that there is a home-based option so they can talk to their doctor about the fact that it's there. So just DTC, direct-to-consumer advertising, which as a pharmaceutical marketer, I have done for many years. And then as far as the trainers, certainly enlisting exercise physiologists. We do have some licensees who use our platform and work with us on the billing, and they use our technology and approach for their own direct patients. And then, yes, adding exercise physiologists. Our model is more along the lines of hiring them, right? Whether we hire a trainer and then train them in the cardiac rehab or exercise physiology. But that's really the core of our business, is our EPs and RNs. If you look at our patient testimonials, and I have looked at all of them, we've done surveys and patient interviews, without exception, the first thing that they cite is their trainer, their EP. They're so attentive, they're so good, they watch out for me, they make sure I'm not overexerting myself, they really care about me. It's great to have someone to connect with when I'm not able to go outside, which of course is true for the last couple of years. So it's not the technology, right? You don't talk to a patient and they say, oh, wow, I love the app so much. And if you look at other examples, more consumer examples, right? Peloton, right? The biggest one of home-based fitness. Everybody talks about the trainers. They're so charismatic. They're so enthusiastic. They're so personable and so motivating. Right? The technology's great. Technology's cool, but it's that human contact and the fact that someone is helping you to improve yourself. That's what resonates with people. And that's quite frankly why we say the core of our group, as I said at the beginning, we are the healthcare provider. We are the clinic. Do we use tech to make it better? Sure. Do we use tech to make it scalable, which really is at the end of the day, our business model is to make There are no solutions for making cardiac rehab scalable to reach everyone who should be able to access it. That's our mission.
Yep. I think I would say that your target demographic are in most cases parents or even grandparents. And I would say these type of people are found mostly on Facebook if we're talking about the ages of like 65 plus. But if we're talking about like 50-year-olds, then they're also potentially found on Instagram nowadays. But yep. I think if you're talking about whether their kids or grandkids are located, they're located on YouTube and TikTok and then Instagram. So how are you thinking? Are you even thinking, I mean, the thought process of thinking on hiring influencers who will put maybe on Facebook who are trainers and they have the target demographic that you're looking for in order to potentially hire them and then promote your brand through their personal brand that they have built over the many years?
Yeah, sure. Great point. We do have, as we talked about at the beginning, we just relaunched the website about a month or so ago. And along with that came up a scale up in the media, right? We have Google ad spending running, Facebook, Twitter. We have a social media presence through our PR firm. We have a social media content expert. And every month we go over the content map and the content timing, and those go out. Actually, they just dropped another one yesterday. So there you go. And that's the Instagram page. And yeah, I think yesterday's post was a video of Tim Bilbrey, who's my partner and co-founder, who we talked about earlier. So media spend and paid boosting of our posts is starting to scale up now. Of course, we wanted to launch the full website before we really started investing in a lot of paid media. So that's scaling up. And then, yes, the next step that we have discussed probably towards the fourth quarter of this year, once we've got a little bit more traction online and on social media, is to identify key influencers in the space, in the health tech space, where there are a lot of very, very active people who are talking about all things health tech, where we obviously are a niche within that, but still part of it. Fitness and cardiac rehab people, I think you're right on to say that if you think about personal trainers who really have a passion for this type of rehab of chronic conditions, not just knee conditions or physical ailments, but cardiac, pulmonary, chronic health conditions, these are people who we definitely would like to enlist, partner with if they are big influencers, hire to join our team. Because again, we are the clinic. So as we add patients, which we're doing all the time, we do need to scale. This is not a self-driven system. I mentioned the free app. There are self-driven options, but the core of our business is driven by in-person meetings, albeit virtual meetings, with an EP.
That's amazing. And I think you're doing an amazing job with your social media presence. But I would love to see if you could, because you mentioned before about the interviews that you have with your patients, would you call them patients?
Yes.
Okay. So you mentioned that before that you have interview with your patients and you have testimonials, and it would be such an amazing thing if you would, with their permission, of course, record a video that they give the testimonial that you can then post on social media with some additional video editing on top of it. And I think you will build so much credibility on top of that. And then I think if you can, with the use of influencer marketing, then that's a great way to scale. I think in 2010, when Gymshark was just starting out, which is Gymshark is a fitness apparel, they were going all in on influencer marketing, as I understood that there was huge enterprise attention there. And I think there's like right now in 2020, since the rise of TikTok, which is like basically short form video content, all the other big players have adjusted and they have their own short form video content. And I think taking use of that by providing educational videos to your target demographic, then it is another way that currently it has enterprise attention and you can scale your business.
Sure. So a couple of things. We do work with a video production firm as part of our PR effort. Again, we just relaunched the website, so we're still kind of pivoting into full scale. There are, I think we have three pretty good patient testimonials. If you scroll down on that Instagram page a little, there's a great one, a young woman named Lenore who's on there. And yeah, there she is, There's Lenore. There you go. Great story, Lenora. Sorry. And there's a couple of others in there as well. And we are scaling up our video production to add to that roster of content, as you rightly point out. And we've certainly had discussions about the right strategy for TikTok, which is still working that out. There are some healthcare professionals who have done a great job with really adapting their messaging to super short form, right? 30 to 60 second snippets for the TikTok attention span. As a traditional pharmaceutical marketer, this is definitely a new and interesting challenge. We have seen it on YouTube, and I've done a lot of YouTube campaigns. So kind of the predecessor, and still, the truth be told, I think hours-wise, YouTube is still the king of digital video, despite TikTok's inroads. So yeah, you're absolutely right. We have shot a few patient testimonials, and they are very, very powerful. More powerful. I could sit here and talk all day, but you hear from a patient who says, I got my life back. I'm able to play with my grandchildren again. I'm able to do the things that make me who I am, is more powerful than any strategy talk I could ever give. So I agree with you completely.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think until the point where, in my opinion, you have thousands of testimonials so you can share like on a more consistent basis, there is thousands, if not millions, of like testimonials online on how what you do has changed their life. And what you do is basically get them moving and exercise so you can share news about like or stories that people have incorporating exercising into their daily life. And it has helped them with many things. It doesn't only have to do with cardiac events. It can do about many other things that I think relates to your brand image. And I think if you build a brand around exercising and around like the benefits of exercising, I think it would be net beneficial for your brand.
Oh, agree completely. And if you look at how we position ourselves, it is a lot more than just improved cardiac health. Obviously, that's part of it, but it's restoring your life. And again, if you ask the patients, that's what that always comes out, right? It's like, they weren't able to do the things that bring them joy, and now they're able to do it again. And that's the core. It's restoring, right? Now, there have been a lot of variations on the tagline, but really restoring life, to keep it at its simplest and most basic.
That's amazing. So are you bootstrapped until now?
A combination. We have raised some money, mostly from friends and family, from the founders of Recovery Plus China. They own a position in Recovery Plus USA. So we have raised enough money to do some expansion. We are running roughly break even. So we are bootstrapping. We are planning to expand. We are in the midst of a Series A raise, and this is to fund growth. It's to fund clinical research. We want to perform. We have several clinical research protocols that we want to start working with a variety of medical institutions, well-known research institutions, to validate the fact that home-based cardiac rehab works. It certainly works better than doing nothing. It works comparably to traditional cardiac rehab. Pardon me. So funding that research is a primary goal of the raise we're in the midst of. And then over the course of the next, probably towards the end of next year, we'd like to evolve our app and get it to the point where it's FDA approvable. So we would get the FDA approval for the app. That is our end goal. Probably won't get there this year, but I think we can do it by the end of next year, realistically. And clearly, as I said, we are the clinic. So as we add patients, we do need to scale. Our ultimate goal is to have 200 active treaters, RNs and exercise physiologists, on staff, full-time employees, working with patients all the time. And then finally, marketing. We've talked about marketing a lot. Obviously, that's a core part of my role, and something you're obviously very familiar with. It's not a huge industry. It's not like we have to spend 20% of gross revenue on marketing like some consumer goods companies. There's, 30,000 cardiologists in the U.S. And it's a niche, right? If you look at the home-based cardiac rehab niche, it's small. So the marketing is never going to be a massive expense. Should we be spending more? Yes, we'd like to scale it up. But driving awareness, and again, as a pharmaceutical marketer, this is a very focused group. It's pretty straightforward to define them and to reach them and to get your message in front of them and to drive awareness. So that's really it. Research is our number one expense. Scaling to make sure we have the expert staff to deliver spectacular care to every single one of our patients, and driving awareness so we can ensure that everyone who needs what home-based rehab is aware of us and able to access us.
In every how many people have a cardiac event?
How many people have a cardiac event? Well, there are 1.3 million people in the U.S. defined by Medicare who are eligible for cardiac rehab. If you were to go beyond that, there are roughly, again, it depends on how you slice the data, there are probably about four times that, about 6 million people who have a high risk of some type of chronic event. And then finally, we talked about preventative care. So anyone who has a risk factors for heart disease, along with some comorbidity like diabetes or weight, then the numbers just skyrocket. Obviously, diabetes is and hypertension and weight issues. That's the majority of Americans, right? It's a very large number.
It says here that someone has a heart attack every 40 seconds.
Yep, that's a heart attack. Yeah, our target is not necessarily only, it's not only people who've had heart attacks, but yeah, it's about 750,000 people have a heart attack annually in the U.S. And I think it's, again, obviously it varies year to year. And of those, I think about 15% are fatal, so 100,000 or something like that.
I would say that every single one of us knows someone who has problems with their health because of lack of exercise. And I think like a big majority of us know someone who has a cardiac event. So I think like, and plus in your industry, I would say that the marketing that they are implementing is behind of what they should be doing. I think they're not focusing, most of the cases, they're not focusing on enterprise attention. They're not focusing on bringing down like cost of customer acquisition. And they're not focusing on actually getting an ROI on their marketing. So I think with what we have discussed here and what you have in plans with the recoveryplus.health, I think there's a lot of domination that can happen with your company if you solely focus on the enterprise attention in your company. So I think the marketing should not be underestimated.
Oh, no, not at all. Actually, I agree with you wholeheartedly. A lot of the sales that we do up until now, and as we've discussed, really, we've been really doing this like full time exclusively since the end of last year. So we're 8 months in or something like that. The pivot that we're undergoing not to give away all the state secrets, right? The pivot that we're undergoing now is exactly in line with what you say, right? We have salespeople in key areas. They go and they talk to clinics and doctors. That's a process, right? That's expensive. That takes time. And we're doing the marketing, mostly digital marketing, trade shows and things like that. Again, it's a small industry. We're going to the AACV PR show in Florida at the end of September, where the majority of people who are in the cardiac rehab field will be in attendance, right? The next level of pivot is exactly what you are describing, which is as we launch the self-guided version of the app. So quick to start, quick to see what, to go and check it out, see what cardiac rehab looks like on your own, right? You're not a patient yet. So that's something that we can drive app downloads, we can drive app usage through digital techniques, and then work to convert people who have checked out the app to become patients of ours. This will give us obviously a huge pipeline. And as a marketer, as a data-driven marketer, which was my previous career, this gives us an ROI, right? I know how much money I spent on Facebook. I know how many apps were downloaded. I know what the conversion rate from app user to actual patient is. And that allows us to move from kind of soft ROI, right? We know what our sales costs are. We know what our marketing costs are. But is there a direct connection?
Second. Yep.
Yeah. So yes, the next level of marketing, and you very accurately have touched on a lot of them. It's moving towards the influencers. It's moving toward patients, to making it easier for them to engage, to check out what the program really looks like, and speed their path towards conversion into what is our ultimate goal, which is someone who is actually formally on therapy with us, working with one of our healthcare professionals to do rehab or prehab, preventative care. So absolutely, that's a key part of our plan. Having a quick, a light version, if you will, or a quick start version of the app is central to that, to just be able to have something that we can immediately offer any consumer. Say, you don't have to talk to your, you know, well, always talk to your doctor. I'll never say that, but talk to your doctor. But you don't need to contact us. You don't have to contact your insurance. You don't have to do a whole lot of stuff. Just download the app and look at what a rehab program is. Is it going to be personalized for you? We'll have several standard routines you can look at. You can see what it's, and then you contact us. You become a full-time patient and you get your own personalized plan and exercise physiologist monitoring.
Yeah, and I think you're completely right. The sense you have to look at the ROI, and you're a data marketer, and it's very, and I think you understand the importance of marketing. And once again, that I think in the beginning, you can basically focus on influencer marketing, which has like a higher ROI in the short term, I would say. And then like also like Facebook ads and paid ads have like a quicker ROI, like short, faster ROI, that I would say compared to content marketing, which takes a more significant amount of time to build an audience, since you're building an audience, you're building a community. But I think that can compound over a period of time. And yeah, it's interesting. So how much are you looking to close in terms of revenue this year?
Revenue this year, we're on track. We've had a couple of operational issues with billing, which, as you can imagine, that's our revenue engine, and medical billing is tricky. So we've had a couple of things that have taken a lot longer than we thought. We expect to have those ironed out by the end of this month. So we're on track to make revenue in the neighborhood of right around $5 million for the full calendar year, accelerating greatly as we head towards the end of the year, as the operational issues are ironed out. I'm expecting we'll be at an annualized run rate of about $10 million by the end of this year.
That's a huge amount, Mr. Peter.
We are proud of our growth and aim to continue. It is, on the other hand, a very, very large, very, very large market. We think we can be pushing, take a couple of years to grow there, but we think we can easily push the $100 million annually of revenue.
That's a big amount. And I wish you all the best in achieving the $100 million amount. I think you can impact lots of lives. And it's magnificent that you have achieved 5 million in like one, in the first year of starting out. It takes serious work to, like, from the first year to achieve that amount. So what would you say is the key to success, to achieving this amount by the end of the year?
Sure. So we did start through Tim's work in his company. We did start with close to $1 million in gross revenue from last year. And we've done a bunch of things. We've expanded the sales force, which has greatly accelerated. We're growing in states. There are obviously a core group of states that have a high population concentration. We're big in Texas. We're very big in New York. Florida is growing quickly. We're working on California. Obviously, it's a lot of locations there. It's a large place. So we're working on the strategy for California. It's almost like separate states there, because it's so different as you move from north to south. So we've added states. We've added salespeople. We've had some big cornerstone wins. I'm not going to deny the fact that those have been very helpful and are driving our growth. There are many facilities that we're talking to who have sometimes thousands of patients annually who are eligible for this, and they're not able to provide the care for them, or they don't want them there. They don't have the in-person facility. And of course, if they have people who have heart risks and they get into our program, then we lower readmission rates, right? Readmission rate, if you've had a cardiac event, is 25 to 30% chance you'll be back in the ER within a month. Our readmission rate is about 2%. So dramatic reduction in readmission rate. So we're going to continue to go after that, continue to speak with the people who, the healthcare providers who recognize how critical that is to the overall treatment of their patients. So yeah, we've been methodically growing. And as we talked about earlier, and you're absolutely right, are we pivoting towards ways where we can grow even more efficiently, where we can grow even more quickly, where it's not so sales-driven, not so labor-intensive, but more scalable.
That's amazing. And how many people are currently working at your company?
We're at 16. We just hired a new one in New York, so we're right around 16. Plans to be pushing 40 by the end of the year.
That's amazing. That's a big number. How do you feel about that?
That's exactly where we want to be. As I said, there's been a lot of focus on operations, financing. Obviously, raising money is a full-time job in itself. The ironing out the billing process, so that's scalable, a lot of time. We're moving towards the end of that process, and our focus now is really on hiring treaters, exercise physiologists and RNs, and focusing on just scaling our clinic side of the business, which, again, that's the core of our business. So I feel great about it. Spend a lot less time on just day-to-day operations and a lot more time on bringing care to people.
That's amazing. And is this the first company that you are running, that you're controlling?
It is. I've been a partner in an ad agency a couple of times. So I've been, I wouldn't say first one, but it's the first real startup that I've done, and really driven by my good buddy, Dr. Lezen. We always had this idea for working together, and he had the mission, he had the expertise in Tim, and put the three of us together, and I wrote them a plan for how to commercialize and drive this, and here I am. So yes, it is.
That's amazing. Would you ever see yourself becoming a business owner, a CEO, or was it something that just came up and you decided to do it?
No, it was always a goal. I've had a few entrepreneurial ventures and certainly been in the C-suite before. It was just really the wanting the exact right opportunity with the right people mm-hmm. at the right time and all of that. And that was this. And here we are.
Why take the first step, Mr. Peter? Like, usually people who take the first step are people who do not have as much responsibilities. And in most cases are people who are young. They don't have a family to provide. They don't have to, they basically do not have that much responsibilities. So I think you're not at the age of 20, 25 currently. So you have more significant responsibilities on your hand. And as people get older, they become less, they do not want to take that much risks. If, like, I'm not mistaken, then why take the first step?
Sure. No, great question. A few answers. One is I've always taken, you know, professional risks to grow along the way. So I am kind of predisposed towards that. But it's really going to be about the opportunity. I had numerous conversations with Jen and Tim. I looked at the model. I looked at what they were doing. It's a great mission. It's easy to get passionate about it. It's easy to see the good you could do in the world. And as a business person, I looked at the challenge that they were going to face, marketing, operations, and expansion. These are all things that I've done for other companies. I know how to do it. I know how hard it is, and I know what the challenges will be, and so they're not going to surprise me. And two great partners. And then when you look at the revenue model, the growth of telehealth, the growth of acceptance of insurance reimbursement in the U.S. for home-based or remote treatments, it just felt like the perfect storm of the opportunity, the market conditions, open space, right? A lot of people who are kind of talking about this, but to be honest, not really doing it right or not really doing it for the right reasons. There's a lot of people who are trying to push into this space for purely revenue reasons, big space. We start from the mission. Dr. Lei Zhen started this mission because he needed something to help his parents regain their health, and nothing existed. So he built it.
And that's then amazing.
Once he got them moving and healthy again, and they now exercise, they're doing great. They now exercise every day, which they never had done before. He said he was going to bring this type of solution to the world. So that's what we're here to do. The mission starts from healing, not from revenue. We're a company, so I'm here to take care of the revenue, but that's not the motivating factor that got this venture started.
Yep. And 5 to 10 years down the line, are you looking to sell the company?
Yeah, so exits, always a good question. We think it's a strong enough value proposition that it would be a standalone that could potentially grow. We already have plans for a potential Series B next year that would involve ex-US expansion. We've looked and we've had many conversations about Recovery Plus Europe, which is fairly close to at least launching. So there's a lot of room to grow. There's a lot of revenue potentials for other vertical markets and around the world. Acquisition, certainly there are some interesting candidates for that. There are a lot of firms that collect the data, right? The Apple Watch, of course, is the most famous, but they don't provide the treatment. We take the data, monitor, and provide the treatment. So certainly you could see a company that wants to move from data collection to actually providing the treatment would be a logical partner. And then potentially, clearly, a large healthcare chain or even an insurance company. So you could see that. But the prevailing thought on this end tends to be this is a standalone company. And if there is an exit, it's an IPO. But I can't predict 5 years out. I can try to guess, but that's my best shot.
Yep, great. And how much time do we have left?
Yeah, here is, I think we're booked through 10:30, but I'm fine if you need to run over.
Okay, great. So basically 5 to 10 years on the line. Let's do some visualization here. 5 to 10 years on the line, you sell your company. What's the first thing you do? What's the first thing you buy?
Well, what's the first thing I do? We sell the company.
100 million.
I don't know. Probably a country house or something like that. I'm a pretty contented guy. So I'm one of those who believes that the best things in life aren't things.
So what do you do? Like, what's the first thing you do?
Probably go on a nice vacation. We're big scuba divers. My daughter and I love to go diving together. So probably go to Malaysia for a month and just scuba dive and not worry about anything for a while. But yeah, it's a good question. But yeah, no, I don't have any great material needs.
I'm looking forward for you to expand next year into Europe. I think you can impact many lives. So I'm looking forward to it.
Very good. Look forward to meeting you in person when we get over there.
Of course. You should, like, if you travel abroad, then you should visit Greece and its islands. I think it will be an experience that you would never regret. And I think if you ask people who have visited Greece and their islands, you would only get positive back from it.
Oh, I have heard wonderful things. Great diving too. So I'd love to get out there and spend some time under the Mediterranean. So hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. Where have you traveled? Are you a big traveler?
Fairly big. I guess I'm a big scuba diver. So all the Caribbean islands and been to South America, diving in the Galapagos, things like that. So yeah, and substantial time in Europe when possible.
Where are you looking to travel over the next years?
Over the next year, well, we're pretty busy with this company, so it's really going to be driven by that. Germany looks like it's a good place to start Recovery Plus Europe, so I think I'll probably be there pretty shortly, and Switzerland also. Healthcare systems that are very open to this type of reimbursement. So those are probably next on the list.
Do you prefer summer or winter?
Oh, I'm both. As I said, I'm a diver, so I love the hot weather, but my background, my ancestors are Finnish, so I'm a winter sports person as well. So I like them both equally.
Are you an introvert or an extrovert?
Probably more introvert, probably more worker than networker.
Yeah. What do you prefer to do on the weekends?
Yeah, we're quite athletic. I'm a ice hockey coach, so I like to coach hockey and play hockey and things like that. But yeah, it's mostly athletic things, big runner. So yeah, get outside and play.
That's amazing. And do you listen to anything during your run?
Yeah, it's a variety of playlists. I'm a amateur bluegrass musician, so I listen to a lot of banjo players and fiddle players to pick up ideas. But yeah, for long runs, you want something pretty mellow, just cruising along. It's more about endurance than speed. So
you don't listen to any podcasts or audiobooks?
In the car, a lot of that. Big Planet Money fan, like to listen to podcasts for long drives. Yeah, we spend a lot of time in Maine and Vermont, which is several hours away. So yeah, the car is that's the Spotify.
Are you a big book reader?
Always a big reader. My first degree was in English literature, so naturally.
That's amazing.
I've always been a reader, so I always have a book reading. Just read a new fictionalized history of Joan of Arc, which is highly recommended. Great, different perspective on the life of Joan of Arc.
So who would you say is the best writer of all time, in your opinion?
Oh, that's a tough one. Best writer of all time. Well, best single books probably have to go with George Orwell, Joseph Heller, huge fan, really brilliant groundbreaking novels. So, yeah. And if we're looking in our backyard in America, Mark Twain.
That's amazing. And do you have any inspiring stories that you've heard of other people or that you have of yourself?
Inspiring stories. I think that most of those are just, as I said, I was an ice hockey coach and managed an ice hockey program up here in the northern Manhattan. And just being able to, it's a hard sport to get into, right? You need the rink, you need the equipment, you need all of that. And over the course of about over 15 years of doing that, we were able to bring so many kids out onto the ice and get them over the fear and get them playing. And just being able to bring the love of sport to people who might otherwise just never be able to play it, right? It's hard. And so, yeah, that would be, we ran a program for many years that was very inclusive, right? All genders and races and skill levels. It was really immaterial.
What do you prefer, burgers or steak?
Burgers or steak? I like both, though I do appreciate a good steak. So I'll probably, if you give me a binary choice there, I'll say steak.
Steak or sushi?
No, not a big sushi person. Nope, that one I'm a big fish eater, but not sushi.
Steak or barbecue?
Ooh, that's a tie. I love a good grill, love a good cookout. So I can't pick one or the other.
Barbecue or mac and cheese?
Barbecue. That's easy.
Not mac and cheese?
Nah, not really.
Is there any food that would surpass barbecue?
Probably not.
Not tacos?
Tacos are nice, but, you know, good grilled ribs are really, really hard to beat, especially if they're made by one of those great barbecue places that leave them leave the food cooking in the smoker for overnight, practically. That's hard to top.
In the US, do you sell any gyro, like Greek gyro? Let me show you. Do you sell anything like this?
Sure, sure. Oh yeah, I'm in New York, so there's gyro stands and gyro shops all over the place.
What about this? Do you have souvlaki?
Absolutely. There's a Greek restaurant that we go to a lot, two blocks from us.
That's amazing. Is it like run by Greek people?
Yep.
Okay, that's amazing. That's now I know that the food is good. If it was run by anyone else except Greeks, then I would say do not go there, please.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. It's a Greek family that runs it.
So you're aware of the Greek foods like souvla and souvlaki?
Sure.
Are the names like what I'm just saying right now, or do they have different names?
Well, souvlaki is always the same. You definitely have Americans who say gyro instead of gyro. But nice. Yeah, I think if you look at the spelling, you can understand it. But now it's pretty accurate.
Souvla, there's no souvla there?
I haven't heard that one. I've certainly heard souvlaki.
Okay, yeah. Souvla is something different. But I'm sure once you go to Greece, then you will have like all the ofton, gleftiko, and souvla, and there's like some Greek foods that are delicious.
Sure, it will be an eye-opening experience. I look forward to it.
Yep. So thank you, Mr. Peter, for coming on the podcast. Do you have any last message before we close out to the audience or anything else you want to say?
Yes. Thank you for having us. This has been a great experience, and good luck with your podcast. Hope to get to meet you over there in Greece sooner rather than later. And thanks for the opportunity. I'm sure we'll reach a lot of people through this platform and hopefully help to spread our message and help advance our cause. So thank you.
Yep. We'll stay in touch. So thank you guys for watching. Stay tuned for more. Subscribe if you like this episode, and talk to you soon.